Is corporate ethics an oxymoron? Do you have to be a jerk to be a successful CEO? Is exploitation the only path to profit? The good news is that many companies, big and small, in the food economy are blazing a different path through Wall Street's jungle of greed, demonstrating that money and morality can be compatible. Texas supermarket chain HEB, for example, has drawn an intense loyal customer base by 1. Investing in good wages and benefits for employees, 2. Showing up in such emergencies as pandemics, hurricanes, freezes to give essential supplies and hands-on help, and 3. Being an involved and supportive neighbor to the hundreds of unique communities it serves. Also, Main Grains is relocalizing the business of milling grain by working with local farmers who had been abandoned by global grain marketers. They're producing flours from heritage grains, boosting the local economy in the process. Then there's Bob's Red Mill, which also mills its products from diverse natural grains, and it's 100% employee-owned. These are part of a rising business alternative to the selfish profiteering ethic of Fortune 500 titans. Called certified B corporations, they definitely exist to make a profit, but they're equally focused on having a positive social impact, prioritizing fair wages, environmental protections, and healthy communities as core elements of their missions, even making those goals legal requirements of their corporate charter. This is Jim Hightower saying Ben & Jerry's and New Belgium Brewery are just a couple more of some 3,800 other businesses now organized as B Corps. Though not pretending to be perfect, they're at least striving to be more than money grubbers, instead trying to contribute to the common good. For more information, go to bcorporation.net. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you lowdowners who subscribe to our monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. You know who you are. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Matt Gaetz. Your buddy Joel Greenberg evidently is about to plead guilty to federal sex trafficking charges. Because if he's pleading, he probably got himself a sweetheart deal, and that sweetheart deal was selling you down the river. Good luck in prison. Maybe they'll put you in the same wing where the rest of the Trump cabal is going to eventually end up. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, the Greenberg-Gaetz saga. Also, all of the insanity going on. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come back and share some thoughts with us. Sarah is a fantastic reporter over at Raw Story, does some of the most important investigative work and some of the most important writing on the interwebs. Make sure you check out her work at rawstory.com. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much. My puns, I feel like, are saving the world one pun at a time.
One pun at a time, and that's important. But Greenberg, there's no way he's pleading guilty unless he got a nice deal, and Gaetz is under the bus.
Yeah, absolutely. He's hanging somebody out to dry, so I don't know who the bigger fish could be. The only person I could think of that would be bigger than Gaetz would be Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis or somebody like that. So it's got to be Matt Gaetz, because those are the people he was partying with. And I mean, here's the thing, like, we've got the receipts on Matt Gaetz. And unfortunately, because the Republican Party is, you know, let's wait and find out, you know, let's let the investigation do its thing, yeah. All of that crap. We've had, over a month now of constant news about this thing getting worse and worse and worse and worse, and Republicans being asked, can you comment on this? Are you curious about, you know, what's going to happen with Gaetz? What do you, you know, did he do it? Did he not do it? This is like a huge thing that the Republican Party is kind of hitched its wagon to, and I don't know how they think that they're going to get out of it, other than, you know, it's just like, here's another.
If you ignore it, maybe it'll go away. Maybe if you go, look over here where Liz Cheney's at, here, you'll forget about all this stuff over there.
Because that worked so well with Donald Trump. I didn't see what his tweet said. I didn't see it. Don't ask me. I didn't see it.
Yeah. No. You know, look, and you know, the Republican Party is a total dumpster fire at this point. You know, and look, I said from the beginning, and I'll say it again, I don't care about Liz Cheney. Don't like Liz Cheney. I think she's a horrible legislator. Policy-wise, she's a monster, and she's evil and all of that. But, you know, the blind squirrel found the nut. You know, I give her credit for at least not wanting to lie when everybody knows the truth. It's not that she doesn't lie, but she's not going to lie when literally everybody else knows what's right.
I know. I've actually found that really shocking that of all of the things that Republicans are willing to stand up for or against or lie about, all of the things from, you know, especially from the early 2000s, from the Iraq War, from, you know, stuff about crazy things that her father did and the twisted financial dealings that he had both before, during, and after he was out of office. I just am surprised that she has any scruples whatsoever and that she's willing to like stand up and be like, oh no, this is the line. This is the line. So I guess it's really good that we now know where Liz Cheney's line is. Yeah. And it's refreshing that that's hers. If only it then could roll into the rest of the Republican Party, but you know, expectations.
So that's the depth. That's as deep as she'll go. The rest of the party, they're free fall.
I guess. I'm surprised. I mean, obviously, there were 9 other Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump. And so it's surprising to me that all of those Republicans are not, you know, as big of a deal. And I guess it's because she's in the leadership, perhaps.
She's in a place where Republicans are in firm control, which means they can easily get someone crazier and more Trumpy to take her place.
That's true. But wasn't there another woman that was a Nova or a vote for impeachment?
She's not in a district. I don't remember.
But it's not a leadership.
I don't remember her being in a district like where Cheney's at, where easily she's going to get whipped from her right. And Cheney's going to lose from the far right. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so they could make an example out of her. Whereas I'd have to go back and double check where my thought is that the other ones, maybe not as easily.
Maybe they were in more of a purple district instead of a shoo-in.
Right. Now I look at this crazy guy from Georgia, this Andrew Clyde, which, you know, everybody's been talking about today. So we got to bring it up. You know, and again, he's just, you know, regurgitating, I'm sure, what he's been told, because this has been what the Republicans have been trying to do since January 7th, is normalize the treason that they recorded and broadcast by saying there was no insurrection. They were just good people walking between the lines, you know, defecating on the floor, building a gallows to hang Mike Pence. Happens every day.
There were very fine people breaking into our Capitol.
Yep.
On both sides. It was the East and the West. I'm surprised that I think one of the things that I was the most surprised by is the fact that he was reading from this paper. It didn't seem like it was an actual opinion of his. And so when they asked him about it today, reporters asked him, he was at a police week commemoration ceremony because apparently a cop in his district died. And so he's like somehow commemorating some cop at this police week thing. And 2 reporters went up to him and said, you know, could you ask him, or this seems weird. You're at this police thing and you basically are just crapping all over the Capitol Police. And he acted like that wasn't what he said. And I was really kind of struck by that. I was like, was he literally given a piece of paper to read and he didn't actually hear himself reading it? I mean, is he really, this is a guy who is not the brightest bulb in the tanning bed. He's a couple of fries short of a Happy Meal. He owns a gun store, I think, in Georgia. That's his career that got him to Congress. So, this is one of those very strange things where he seems like it's just a complete tool of the right. Not like, you know, that
it looks
kind of
like
tool.
Marjorie Taylor Greene wrote his notes for him.
Yeah, it just seemed like it just seems so weird because I've never heard of this guy. Because there are 435.
35.
Yeah. Trying to think if we have any special elections because somebody died lately. And so obviously this is some guy who hasn't stuck out to me until this moment.
Yeah, me neither. So, I mean, I had to look him up. And now I'm going, wow, here's a new one. Looks like he's trying to get his 15 minutes and he's gotten it. He's gotten everyone's attention. And
well, I think he's probably trying to get his 15 million is what he's trying to get for fundraising for the election.
No. And look, it is really all about the money. I mean, I look at someone like Lauren Boebert who came in and she had very slick campaign to get the gun nuts on her side and start pouring money. They had very slick videos and they had a whole kind of reality star YouTube influencer kind of campaign going to where it wasn't about legislation. It was just about making her look like an ammosexual.
Yeah, it was a cult of personality and it's gun fetish. And that is her brand. She created this brand and this personality that has, I think, incensed so many people in her district to be rabidly running to the polling places to vote for her. And it's kind of that same model that Donald Trump has employed. It's this cult of personality. And so I look at her in sort of the same vein. And to a lesser extent, I feel like the last election, Marjorie Taylor Greene wasn't really as out there as Lauren Boebert was.
Right.
But now Marjorie Taylor Greene is sort of employing that same tactic for the exact same purpose.
No, you're right. I think Greene's going to win again. I think there's a good chance she could win. I don't know about Boebert.
Of the two, I feel like Boebert is probably less so. But I don't know that district as well. The one thing that I found out in the last couple of weeks is that the county parties, the county Democratic parties in North Georgia, have all joined forces, and they are working hard because they prioritize this. This is a really important deal for them, and they are all of them have come together to start raising money, to start building an email list and getting volunteers and door knocking, and like they're starting early, and it's a priority for them. They don't even have a candidate yet, but that's how important this race is to them. And that's one of those things where you're just like, yes, good on you. This is exactly what, I wish every Democratic Party would be doing. And, good on them.
Yeah, no.
Go Georgia.
Look, it comes back to getting things done. And I think the more Biden gets done, if we can get an infrastructure bill pushed through at some point sooner as opposed to later, I think that's going to be helpful. But it is what it is. But the reason I brought up the Georgia Republican Clyde in his comment is, they're trying to normalize what happened on January 6th. Mm-hmm. In fact, you've got the 1-6er group who every day does the Pledge of Allegiance and sings the national anthem while in jail. And, now you find, all of these people, and you've written a story on this, that you got these people who are, we weren't actually doing anything wrong. We were just defending ourselves. We were defending ourselves by jabbing a cop with a flag or by hitting him in the head with a fire extinguisher or by defecating on the floor or urinating on someone's desk or stealing laptops. And we were just defending ourselves, Sarah, poor us. We were standing our ground.
One man in particular said that whenever he was bashing a cop with a skateboard, that he was doing it to defend himself. And that was in part of the court documents as he was trying to get the court to let him out of jail while he was waiting for his trial. And the Justice Department came in and was like, interesting you say that. Because we actually have a new video that shows you beating the hell out of somebody several times. So this actually was not just you defending yourself against one person. This is a pattern throughout the course of the entire insurrection.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. If you could make a case in the court of law that if I start a fight with somebody and they beat the living tar out of me and I then have to kill them because I was just standing my ground. I was defending myself. If you could make that legal, I can make an argument for a guy beating a cop with a skateboard. He was just standing his ground. The cop kept coming at him.
Right. I wish that was the way it really worked, because then, maybe fewer people of color would get shot. But, this is it's consistent with the message of this wasn't that big of a deal. this wasn't an insurrection attempt. This wasn't an attempt for, you know, for people to try and take over the legislative branch of Congress. Nobody was trying to kill any elected officials. That's part of this narrative. It wasn't that bad. It's not that big of a deal. He wasn't trying to kill anybody, obviously. He was just standing his ground. He was just defending himself against these. And it's all part of this narrative to basically deny the moon landing from 1-6, right? It's the same idea. Like, we're denying the moon landing. We're denying the Holocaust. We're denying 9/11. And now we're denying 1-6.
And now, you know, now they're gloating over how, speaking of Georgia, how easy it was to go and rig the vote. In fact, this Jessica Anderson, the executive director of the Heritage Action Group, Heritage Action for America, evidently she was bragging that was easy to get their legislation through Georgia and with the Republicans there.
And we know about the Heritage Foundation. They do all of this research, this fake research to justify right-wing policies. And in this case, this is their political arm, where basically they came in and said, hey, you guys should be pushing this voter suppression law. And they're like, oh, we don't know anything about writing them laws, because that's real hard.
Here you go. We've got it all written for you. All you have to do is put your name on your homework. Like when you were in
school. That's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened in this case. And then she went and bragged about it. She said, in some cases, we write it for them. And in other cases, the one thing that really killed me was she said, in some cases, we try and make it look more organic, like it came from the grassroots, so it doesn't look like all of the other legislation is. Like, so now you're not only writing legislation on behalf of elected officials as a special interest group, as a big money group, but now you're trying to fake it so it looks like it's from activists or grassroots.
Yeah.
So that's how bad it is.
They don't want to look like the American Legislative Exchange Council, because you may remember there was a Florida legislator who actually took an ALEC model piece of legislation and just turned it in with ALEC's name still on it. She didn't even bother to write her own name at the top of the page.
Yeah.
She just put it right in. And the thing that I think most people don't understand is really the Heritage Foundation is the Republican Party's brain. Them and the rest of the state policy network. There are a lot of people paid huge money for think tank approved messaging, focus group approved messaging, so that they can then hand it to Republican legislators, because they're all lazy. They just want to go and drink and party and carry on and do whatever it is they're doing, preach to religious groups. So they do their homework for them. And they're very happy with that. Corporate America gets what they want because they fund these big think tanks, and the Republican politicians get what they want because they don't have to do anything other than going, here, I have someone who did my homework for me.
And now all of the corporations are going, oh, wait, maybe this is a bad idea. It's like all of a sudden they realized, oh, maybe we shouldn't have been paying all of these right-wing groups this whole time, because it turns out this isn't getting us anywhere. This isn't helping us. And now, you know, we've been giving money to all these Republican groups and none of them are in power. So, you know, it's this evil cycle that I feel like one of the pieces of H.R. 1 does kind of talk about a little bit is the campaign finance aspect of it. And I wish that we could pass, you know, obviously a Citizens United bill that was a little bit better, that would kind of block some of this stuff. But even then, like, this is really soft money. This is the Heritage Foundation is a 501c3. They are a nonprofit. And they're very clearly, like, they're creating lists of judges that Trump just printed off and went, eeny, meeny, miny, mo. And pick Brett Kavanaugh. So, I mean, this is part of their thing. And it, you know, it's something that the Democrats just don't do. They've never done. Democrats don't.
They're not that organized.
They're not. And they don't organize from the very beginning. That's the other part of this, is that, you know, when you have a young Republican who's really smart and really good at campaigning, they're never unemployed, not for one second. They go from a campaign to the Republican Party grabs them and says, okay, we need to take care of you in the off season. They put them at the Heritage Foundation. They put them at, you know, wherever somebody's office is a holding pattern until the next election.
Yep.
And Democrats just kind of leave all of the smart people out to dry. And they're like, good luck. Have fun.
No, and this isn't just in the political world. This is media. This is, you know, they fund professors in every university across the country. They fund people to write crappy books, and the Heritage Foundation buys them and burns them. You know, there's just all of this money that goes through this that generates this kind of messaging to where, you know, just the guy who's driving around in his car with his mouth open, you know, learning by osmosis, thinks that, oh, my God, this is organic, when the reality is it's all just political theater that's been paid for by corporate money to get you to believe that the GOP really cares about you, when the reality is they don't.
They care about making money. That's all that matters. It's a business. The Republican Party is all about a business. And that's why you're seeing people like Marjorie Taylor Greene rise in the level of importance, because she makes money. That kind of fiery rhetoric and anger and frustration, just like Donald Trump, using his name on everything, it makes money, and that's what they want.
Yeah. What did you think of the yesterday, Marjorie Taylor Greene going after AOC?
Man, that was stupid. I mean, here's the thing: is everybody has a camera. Like, you can't do this stuff and not be captured on camera. And so there are these pictures, and it looks really bad. And,
looks bad to us. I mean, to her base, you know, she's out there fighting the good fight.
But those people are never going to change their minds. If you have somebody who's like chasing after someone and screaming at them and poking their finger in their face, you know, that doesn't play well with independent voters. Yeah, but nobody wants to see that.
This isn't about independent voters. This is about fleecing the flock. This is about getting more money out of the faithful, passing the collection plate, and getting more of the true believers to kick into her coffers. That's how I see it. I think she did exactly what she wanted to do, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of money rolls into her accounts.
I think if it wasn't that, it'd just be something else. Yeah. You know, she'd go out and shoot some bill or something on a gun range or something. It's not, you know, it's not this, it's regardless of what she does. Every week has to be a new stunt, and this just happens to be one of them. The difference is she's going after somebody. She's punching up is what she's doing. And you see this a lot of times with people on Twitter, where they want to build their following, so they start fights with people with larger followings, and then it becomes this huge deal. And it's the same thing, but it's happening nationally.
Yeah.
She recognizes that AOC is much more powerful, much more influential, and she's like, I need to get some of that. And that's what she's trying to do, which is why AOC is just like, talk to the hand.
Yeah, I love the fact that she just didn't feed the troll.
Yeah, I'm proud of her, because that's the smart thing to do. That's absolutely, and I'm not sure any other Democrat would have been smart enough to recognize that that's what it was.
I got to be honest, though, there's part of me, I grew up in a housing project. I grew up in a place where, you know, someone did that. I would have loved to have seen AOC just turn around and cold cock her right between the
eyes. It's hard, man. That's the thing, is you see these trolls all the time, everywhere. It's all the trolls, and it's so hard not to feed the trolls. It's hard not to say something in the comments, or, you know, not even look at the comments.
Just move. Don't read. Like, that's it. The first thing you learn, don't read the comments. Now, but here's the thing. I mean, even Meghan McCain has jumped into kind of a little bit of all of this, where, you know, evidently she's not all that concerned about what happened on January 6th.
Yeah, it's the same sort of thing where today she decided that there were so many more. She called them real problems. There are real problems going on. And her real problem of today, I swear to God, was that when she left her house to go to work, and I thought she actually filmed the show at her house, so I don't understand why she has to drive into the studio, but whatever. But when she left the house, the gas station in her neighborhood had a really long line, and she didn't have time to wait in it. And so that is a huge problem, because Meghan McCain can't get gas. She cannot wait for 24 hours or for the weekend for things to like calm down. She needs her Ziploc bags of gas right away. And that is her real problem that is more important than the attack on the legislative branch of Congress.
Wow.
The entitlement.
You listen to this stuff and you just go, I live in a different world than the rest of us.
Bless her heart.
And finally, let's talk about the former guy. Is it possible Ron DeSantis could be his savior?
That is the funniest thing I have heard all day. this idea that I guess, I can't remember if it was in the Miami Herald or the Orlando Sentinel, but there was an article this morning about officials in Palm Beach County who are concerned that if that Donald Trump is going to get arrested, indicted, and then arrested, and that they're going to have to do something to, because he's going to be at Mar-a-Lago and they're afraid of like a standoff or like what their plan is. Like they're trying to figure out, okay, if this happens, what do we do? And the reason for that is that Florida is not an extradition state. So like, you remember whenever, what's his name was in the embassy in the Ecuadorian embassy. Yes. And so
Snowden the other one, the blonde guy, yes. The WikiLeaks guy, him.
Assange.
Yeah, there you go.
So it's the same kind of thing where they would not extradite him. Florida will not extradite Donald Trump. Because that's how, you know, it basically would mean that the governor would have to sign off on it. And at least that's the way that it was sort of explained to us this afternoon. So it's one of those things where the only way that Trump can be indicted and then hauled off to court is if he leaves the state of Florida to then go to the Southern District of New York, D.C., or the Manhattan DA.
Right.
Those are the three, like, main suits right now. So, but the interesting thing about that is that really kind of cuts into your 2024 plan.
Yeah, kind of does.
And also, you can't really campaign.
Yeah, the other side of this, couldn't the Southern District of New York then just seize all of his assets?
In Florida, they cannot seize your assets that are located in Florida.
Yeah, but so there's that building in New York that's got his name all over it.
But all of the stuff in New York, they could seize. And if he, you know, showed up in New York and said, hey, don't do that, then they could arrest him there, too. So, he's sort of between a rock and a hard place. There's this idea that Ron DeSantis could step in and say, no, we're not extraditing. But that would mean, you know, the United States, every other, you know, 49 state and all of our territories could be like, OK, well, then we're not extraditing any of the criminals that we have to Florida. So it's sort of this trade off of, you know, you have all of these other states. And if you have any crimes that, you know, somebody commits in your state and they flee over the state lines, then sorry.
Yeah, that
you're not going to extradite Trump, then we're not going to.
We have so much entertainment yet to come.
I know. That's a long way off. I think an indictment is probably a ways off. The closest one, I think, is the tax one in the Manhattan DA's office, just because they're starting to like dig down to Weisselman's grandchildren. That's how you know it's going deep.
Yeah, and look, you know, whatever they found in Rudy's office, I'm sure that's going to bring some interesting fun as well. But again, this is a year down the road, at least, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so any talk of him running.
Just in time for election is what I'm hoping.
Just in time for election. Looking forward to that. Sarah, as always, I appreciate the time and the fantastic work that you do. There were so many more stories I wanted to get to, but I got to take a quick break here. I hope folks will take a look at all of those other fantastic stories over at rawstory.com. All of the articles there, not all of them there, but read all the ones written by Sarah Burris, my favorite reporter over there. Sarah, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Thank you so much. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Good stuff. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Fuel still has to travel through the supply chain before once again reaching the gas pumps.
Colonial Pipeline restarts operation days after major cyber attack.
Drivers along the East Coast have turned fears of a fuel crisis into an actual one.
Out of gas because panic buying led to shortages. Biden administration greenlights nation's first major offshore wind farm. Plus,
Elon Musk sent the cryptocurrency on a rollercoaster ride over the past few days.
Tesla ditches Bitcoin due to massive carbon footprint.
All of those crypto stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Chaos at the pumps tonight.
This is worse than a hurricane.
No, it is not worse than a hurricane. What is wrong with this country? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, let's start hoarding gasoline just because we can,
No, let's
what?
Not.
No?
Huge sighs of relief among officials and consumers after the corporate owner of the massive Colonial Pipeline began to resume operations on Wednesday, ending a 5-day shutdown following a massive ransomware cyber attack. As we go to air, there is no word yet on whether the company paid the ransom.
Oh, they paid.
The pipeline supplies 45% of fuel for the East Coast. The company says it will take several days until fuel deliveries return to normal.
Correction, this just in. The company is saying they didn't pay.
It's important to note that there was no actual gasoline shortage on the East Coast.
But they paid.
That's according to government officials and energy analysts. But panic buying and hoarding of gasoline by consumers caused a shortage. Reportedly, thousands of gas stations in the Southeast ran out of fuel by Wednesday. Reports of panicked consumers using unsafe methods to hoard gas forced the U.S. Product Safety Commission to issue a statement warning, quote, do not fill plastic bags with gasoline.
Plastic bags? They were putting gasoline in plastic bags?
Reportedly.
What is wrong with this country?
Gas buddies Patrick DeHaan on CNN warned that hoarding is dangerous and actually impacts public safety.
People run out and hoard, that's going to mean less fuel for people that very much need it. Thinking first responders, frontline workers who need to get to work. Because once it's out, it's out.
But the pipeline cyber attack and the ensuing panic paid off great for oil producers. Oil and gas prices shot up because of the Colonial Pipeline ransomware hack.
Huh. The more they fail, the more money they make. Go figure.
In other news, out in the Pacific Ocean, Tropical Storm Andres set a new record for the earliest date in the year for a storm to form.
Yeah, wait. This is May.
Yes.
We're having a hurricane form now?
In the Pacific. It's showing up before the official start of the Pacific cyclone season, which begins on May 15th.
Ah.
Andres broke the previous earliest storm record that was set in 2017.
Mm.
Tesla CEO Elon Musk roiled markets for Bitcoin this week when he announced on Twitter that Tesla will stop accepting Bitcoin as payment for its electric cars, citing the vast and relentlessly increasing use of fossil fuels, especially coal, to provide energy for Bitcoin mining and transactions.
About time. I know that a lot of people have been criticizing him for that for quite a while.
Oh,
glad
yes.
He is not doing that anymore.
Bitcoin relies on computers to exist, and the growing value of Bitcoin is directly tied to the amount of energy it uses. Because of Bitcoin miners, several coal plants around the U.S. and the world that would have otherwise closed were pressed back into service to mine Bitcoin.
Mm.
Some more good news. The Biden administration has approved a new utility-scale solar energy project on public lands in the California desert. It will be located in an area designated under the Obama-era Desert Renewable Energy Conservation Plan, which minimizes impacts on plant and animal species and tribal and recreational stakeholders.
Nice.
And the Biden administration has given the final go-ahead for the nation's first major offshore wind farm, issuing final permits for the Vineyard Wind project off the coast of Massachusetts after it was canceled by the Trump administration. The 800-megawatt wind farm will power 400,000 homes. However, Vineyard Wind's CEO says that since the U.S. currently lacks a wind energy supply chain, manufacturing of some of the project's components must be outside of the U.S., but he hopes that the approval will spur investment in more U.S. manufacturing.
There's an idea.
It's a first step in catching up to Europe, the global leader in offshore wind. Europe installed the equivalent of 3 Vineyard Wind projects in 2020 alone.
Because Europe is better than us. What is wrong with this country? For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, saw some sad news today. Spencer Silver died. I guess that would have been last Friday. He was 80 years old, and you're going, who the hell is Spencer Silver? He's the guy who invented the Post-it note. One of the most important inventions of the 20th century. How would my wife tell me what to do without the Post-it note? What would my wife be able to post on things and tell me, don't eat this, or don't do this, or hey, don't forget this, without that little yellow piece of paper with a little sticky stuff on the back to remind me? What would life be without Spencer Silver, who sadly on May 8th passed away? He was 80 years old, and yeah, there you go. The guy who brought us the Post-it note. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Nay. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
Post-it note, Bob. What would you do without it?
Right. Well, you know, I almost didn't make it on the show tonight. Carol and I were talking, and she was reading me all the honey-do list things for you on the Post-it notes.
Yeah.
We almost didn't get on tonight.
And there was actually a guy... I remember the story from years ago, who did his PhD thesis or whatever on Post-it notes.
Yeah, I used them constantly when I was in Congress. I mean, constantly. Would put them on my desk. I'd put them everywhere. On my car window.
Yeah, what would life be without Spencer Silver?
True.
There you go. Sad to see his passing. But he lived a good life. 80's a good run, I think.
There you go. Sure is.
Good for him. And I'm sure he did really well for him, especially Post-it note forward. Let's talk about ransom. Evidently, the Colonial Pipeline folks paid almost $5 million in ransom. I thought they didn't pay anything.
You know what? I think they got off cheap, actually.
Okay.
You know, because some of these malware criminals are charging like regular citizens $400, $500, $600. So $5 million. I mean, that's. I thought it'd be even more, but they did pay. Because at first I thought they said they weren't going to pay.
So if they pay, what guarantee do you have they're not going to do it again and make you pay again and again and again?
Well, correct. I mean, you don't. And if you pay, what guarantee do you have that they flip that switch back on?
Yeah.
But they did. I mean, what is it? Cyber criminals? I don't know.
And now we also find out that there are some folks who've hit the D.C. Police Department. Evidently, the same kind of Russian-speaking ransomware syndicate is what they've called it. And evidently, they've got a whole bunch of disciplinary files on the police, intelligence reports, lots of embarrassing stuff that they're holding over the D.C. Police Department's head. They're asking for $4 million. And I'm going, one got away with, just about $5 million, but they're holding the D.C. police hostage for four.
And the oil company's got a lot more money than the D.C. police. Yeah, they've got documents, confidential documents. They've got them. And there's the other thing. If you pay, who says they're not going to release those documents anyway?
Yeah. Yeah. But here's my thing. Should they pay to keep those things quiet? And isn't that stuff that, fine, put it out. We the citizens should know what's going on, shouldn't we?
Well, if it was, I don't know if you remember the kind of famous Steubenville, Ohio was back in the district I represented.
Yeah.
They had a rape case up there.
Remember.
I'm sure you remember that. Well, at that time, Anonymous came in and went through the computer systems of the school and found out some, I don't want to misquote, it was a coach or somebody was covering up for these two guys for the rape. They were covering, trying to cover it. So Anonymous went in and then at that time released all of that information for, quote, the good of the public. And it put a whole different light on the case. So that's what Anonymous does, though. And this group is not Anonymous group. This group is more of the what you call, the criminal element.
Yeah.
So I don't think that they would, if paid, I don't think they would release. Now, if it was Anonymous, they wouldn't even ask for money. They would just go into give, you know, light of day on issues.
So we're anti-criminal syndicate. It sounds like we're pro-anonymous.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying it's sort of like, I can get in deeper here in controversy. It's like Eric Snowden. Is he a traitor or a hero?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? If it wasn't, I remember there was Senate testimony when they were sitting there saying, no, we don't do that. And all of a sudden Snowden goes on live from Moscow. And yes, they do. Yes, they listen to you, you know. So it's sort of the same thing. What Anonymous does is illegal, but then again, it's sort of like the Robin Hood thing, you know. Anonymous then printed things in the rape case that would absolutely have never been known.
Yeah.
And so they did an illegal format to do it. Now, so I think they're going to be looked at differently, even though it's maybe not legal. Whereas the, you know, the criminal element, the dark side element, they call themselves, they are doing it for money. I'm just surprised that they don't turn around and do it again.
No, I am too. And how long does $4 million buy you then? If you're the pipeline folks, or $5 million, how long does that take? You know, is that,
well,
6 months? What is it?
I would assume they're going to pay somebody $2 million to build a better firewall. Somebody.
One would hope.
Wouldn't you think?
One would hope.
Or $3 million?
At least. And now you've got Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg saying today that, you know, this is a wake-up call. Duh, this was a wake-up call 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. We should have been doing something 10 years ago.
Well, what I sort of don't understand, when we, you know, started on technology, which was in 1995, actually, in the House, because, you know, we didn't have internet till then. And we started technology, and we were getting breaches all the time. And if you notice, how many times do you hear that the, you know, the congressional records and members' offices is being, you know, displayed by somebody somewhere? You don't. And we created a system. I was there with Steny Hoyer at the time, and then Congressman John Larson of Connecticut, and we spent considerable amounts of money, I mean hundreds of millions over a period of time, Rick, to create better systems, because China and Iran in particular were trying to hack our systems every night in
right.
in the Congress. So I'm sitting here thinking, if to this day Congress has done, you know, a pretty good job of doing that with military level protection in a sense of the computer systems, why is everybody else not getting on board? Why are there so many breaches?
Well, this is where I, you know, I go back to, you know, there, and this for me goes back to, you know, Y2K. You know, mm-hmm. you know, we didn't know what was going to happen with the computer systems, and, you know, we were afraid that all the water, you know, all the, you know, the water systems were going to shut down, and all the power grids were going to shut down, because we had no idea what the how the computers were going to react. And it
right.
made me go at that, even at that point, going, you know, we need to be thinking about this stuff a little bit differently and doing it a little bit better. And now I'm looking at all of this ransom stuff and all of the cyber attacks, and you go, shouldn't we be on a certain level not handing this off to private corporations who do this kind of stuff in piecemeal? Shouldn't there be some kind of overhaul, or some kind of comprehensive plan to make sure that we're not so vulnerable?
Well, there should be, and there should also be grid plans. You know, Texas did what it did due to its, you know, deregulation, et cetera, and then people didn't have to, you know, provide the backing of these break-off electric companies, and so, you know, you saw what happened down there. And I think it's a responsibility, should be, of the federal government to be able to say, we have certain grids, and you're going to operate off of alternative grids, and we're going to create more grids. It's just like the computers. If you leave it up to, you know, some of the private companies to just say what they're going to do, this is what you can, you know, expect to happen. Whereas the government should have at least the ability to say, you know, these are the certain standards you're going to use. Surely the NSA actually could be of help, I would assume.
Yeah, and again, for me, it comes back down to this, you know, the fact that a lot of software development happens in places like China and India. The fact that the Russians, you know, have such a huge, you know, cyber attack capability. And, you know, someone had, you know, tried to sell me on this Kaspersky Labs. And I'm going, you know, they're a Russian company, right? Well, sort of. I guess they've got ties. You go, shouldn't we be on a certain level talking about this stuff in a national security light? You know. And not having, you know, one phishing email take down, oh, I don't know, you know, half our grid?
Right, exactly. Or just like this, 45% of the supply of oil to the east, you know.
Yeah, I'm not getting my trees cut down this weekend because, you know, a friend, the person we was going to do it was coming up from Virginia, can't get gas.
I just had a call from about 10 minutes ago. A friend in Florida said that he is going station to station and cannot get gas. He's got to leave, you know, of course, in the morning somewhere, and he can't get gas.
Couple of days. Yeah. It'll be fine. And this is
the dirty mineral mining. That's another one. They call them dirty, you know, minerals, dirt, and it's China's cornering that market, and we let one of the last companies collapse in the United States. These are the little parts that are in the phones we're talking on and the computers, and China rules.
Because we're stupid.
Right.
Evidently. I wanted to get your thoughts on the big news of the day. This congressman from Georgia, this Andrew Clyde, who I actually had to look up because I didn't know who he was. He wasn't anywhere on my radar. But I'm sure you saw the quote, but he said that there was no insurrection on January 6th. To call it an insurrection is a bold-faced lie. Watching the footage, the TV footage, and those who walked the Capitol and walked through Statutory Hall showed people in an orderly fashion, Bob, in an orderly fashion, staying between the stanchions and the ropes and taking videos and pictures. You know, if you didn't know the TV footage was from the video from January 6th, you'd think it was just a normal tourist visit day, Bob. It was just a normal walk through Statutory Hall. That's all. It's just a normal day.
When I read this, and of course, you know, the Capitol is dear to me as it is to people that serve there and the people of the United States. It's our symbol, you know, one of the greatest symbols. And when this all happened, I mean, I've talked to friends, staffers, and, you know, former members and members that, you know, it made everybody just, that it was, that were normal, sick to their stomachs over this. And I read this article of this Georgia Rep. Andrew Clyde, and he said he used words that, like, docile. And, you know, that they stayed in the rope lines and you know, in a, that they had an orderly fashion, staying between the stanchions and the ropes, taking videos and pictures. How could he even think like that?
Well, because there are couple of videos where a couple of guys did do that.
Yeah, but, you know, how he... I don't know.
While they were in an orderly fashion building a gallows to hang the vice president.
I just don't know how he can even believe he gets away with this. I don't know. I guess he does.
No, but this is the normalization of that kind of behavior. You had to know this was going to happen, right?
Not to this level. I mean,
really?
I can see people will debate, did Donald Trump, you know, say to destroy the Capitol or not. I mean, you know, they'll debate that, and you'll hear arguments. How do you debate after looking at the videos? Because a lot of members, you know, have said, McCarthy yesterday, the minority leader, said that, you know, that it was a horrible thing, it was wrong, and they should be prosecuted. So how does anybody come up with what this guy comes up with? That shocks me.
No, I see. I can see it.
I don't get it.
See, I can see it in 6 months. I can see it a year that these people are going to be framed as patriots, as heroes. These are going to be the people who are defending democracy. And you know, who knows? At some point, we may be calling them the 1-6ers, and history will remember them as the founders of the revolution. I'm looking at this stuff and going, we'll see how this history is written, but they're in the process of trying to make these people out to be heroes.
Well, I know. I mean, and then some people commented about, you know, some of the violence that was perpetrated against the people in the Capitol because, you know, somebody was shot. I mean, what do you kind of expect when this is going down?
Of course,
the Capitol Hill police are going to respond.
The most outrageous, I'm glad you brought that up. I think it was that Paul Gosar who called her a martyr.
Mm-hmm.
She was executed. No, they told her stop attacking the Capitol. They were defending themselves from a raging mob. She was no martyr.
Yeah, he said she was executed. And this was the woman that was coming through the speaker's lobby. And just for the listeners' edification on this, once you go through that door where she was shot, you are within literally 3 feet of going into where the speaker's podium is. You're within 3 feet. So I understand. It's sad. Anybody gets killed. I understand why she was shot.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know whether she had a gun. Everybody came in. They didn't go through metal detectors like this. Georgia congressman makes it sound like they went through the metal detectors before they orderly took pictures. They didn't know whether she had a gun or not. She was within feet, you know, 3 feet, if she got in there, of where people were. And, yeah, and Gosar says that the police executed her. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, well, I can. Look, at the end of the day.
Really, I was shocked.
No, see, none of this surprises me because this is what I expected. You know, they were going to rewrite this history. They're going to look. I fully expect some of these trials, these people to say, stand up and say that they're patriots, and that, you know, and that, you know, going to jail, they're martyrs, and they're going to be GoFundMe accounts to support their families. I see this going in a really, really bizarre place with some of the folks in this country.
And he should be hit for statements he's making about the Capitol Hill police. He should be hit by other, not physically, but he should be attacked back by other members, especially the Republican side, either side.
Oh, come on.
He should be hit back at, because yeah, the morale of the Capitol Hill police is just going to continue to get bad. I mean, if they say they're executioners, what were they supposed to do? Just, okay, all the police just leave the building, let them go.
They're,
you
good
know,
people,
they
Bob.
Were supposed to do?
They're good people.
Wow. Bizarre, Rick. It just blows my mind.
Good people. They were just taking pictures. And like the guy who was beating the people with the cop with the skateboard, he was just standing his ground.
Now, Georgia Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, in response to a video that, you know, they put Clyde's comments side by side with the video, he said, his quote was something like, "It's hard to believe any elected official could be this oblivious." The lieutenant governor had said that about the congressman from Georgia, Clyde.
Well, another congressman, from oblivious congressperson from Georgia. You've got Marjorie Taylor Greene going after AOC yesterday.
Yeah, you know, on that, there was when the members start to say, well, they think they'll take her to the Ethics Committee for this, unless she hit her, they do have to stop this part of it. Look, Marjorie Taylor Greene went out, and she achieved what she wanted to.
Yep, got attention.
She stood in a hall, yeah, yelling at AOC. AOC, I loved AOC's comments. I was a bartender. I threw people like her out all the time. out of the bar. That's what she said. But Marjorie Taylor Greene, hey, you don't call Antifa and Black Lives Matter a terrorist group. Hey, I'm talking to you. And then Greene threw her hands up in the air so everybody could see her dramatically off the floor of the House. And that's what she wanted. She wanted in the newspapers and TV. Now, when they made the comment, though, well, maybe she should be taking the Ethics Committee for it. No. Don't give her any more publicity.
No.
Because it's not it's a stupidity violation.
Yep.
Now, they're going to have to make a committee for stupidity. It's not an ethics violation.
No, they shouldn't. And
yeah.
Look, and I go back to what I said from the beginning. They shouldn't have thrown her off her committees because now she's got nothing but time to cause trouble. Should have at least kept her pretending like she was working. Or at least,
right.
As my, and I say this all the time, as my son says, keep her on the committee because she's not useless. She serves as a bad example. That's simple.
She wanted publicity. That's all.
That's all she wanted.
Because for her, it's good to attack AOC.
That's all it's about, getting attention. Oh, sure. Her mother must not have breastfed her. Who knows? very, very bizarre times. But, Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, good stuff.
Thank you, Rick. Okay, thank you.
Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1968. That was the day that workers across Paris joined students in a citywide general strike.
college students had begun an occupation at the famed Sorbonne University earlier that May. These students were protesting what they saw as governmental repression in post-war France. A story by NPR, marking the 40th anniversary of the protests, described the situation in France, where women could not wear pants to work and married ones needed a husband's permission to open a bank account. Homosexuality was a crime. Factory workers could be fired at will. The news on the single TV channel required governmental approval. And the overcrowded education system was authoritarian. The students protested French leader Charles de Gaulle and the police. The addition of workers to the protest greatly increased its scope and impact. Paris and much of the country ground to a halt. President de Gaulle was able to weather the protests and keep his political power. By the end of June, most workers had returned to their jobs, but the country would never be the same. The protests of that spring became known as the Social Revolution. It was a turning point in the nation's history, and institutions from workplaces to universities would undergo a liberalization due to the protests. One of the most lasting images from the strike was a series of posters, simple designs emblazoned with the slogans and demands of those involved. One such poster called people to strike, declaring, "Working now is working with a gun to your head." Another read simply, "Factories, universities, union."
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, leave it to Missouri. You may remember back, last election cycle, the good folks of the Show Me State voted to approve a constitutional amendment expanding Medicaid coverage for all the folks there. For people whose incomes were under 138% of the federal poverty line. It passed by a 53-47 margin back August, I guess, of last year. The Missouri legislature refused to fund it. They refused to provide any funding for it. And now the governor of Missouri, Mike Parson, is saying, we tried. We tried. Sorry, poor people. No health care for you. And this, again, is another one of those moments where you go, these are people who should be voted out. The collective outrage should be very loud. People should be registering to vote. And this is where I keep coming back. The dumpster fire that is the GOP, they have no ideas. They're bringing nothing to the table. This is where Democrats have an opportunity. And that opportunity is to make people's lives better. And Joe Biden, if he can get through an infrastructure bill and you can start getting jobs and people getting back to work. And I'll tell you, there's part of me that I'm very happy to see that people are holding out a little bit for higher wages. We're going to tick things up a little bit and you may actually see higher receipts into your state coffers. You may actually see lower payments going out for all of the social programs that we have. This may be a really good thing. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, though. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any of today's program, you can download the podcast there at the website. Get the app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Make sure you tune in tomorrow, the big panel. We'll have the wrap-up of all of the fun and excitement of this week. Looking forward to that. But again, if you got any thoughts, questions, comments, love to hear them. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.